Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. I've got a fascinating guest who hopefully will show up shortly in store for you today. Looking forward to it. Did you catch my show last week with my dear old friend, Teresa de Grosbois? Talking about her retreat center in Costa Rica, Vista Mundo. Highly recommend if you're thinking about hosting a retreat in Costa Rica to check it out and contact Teresa. It's a really beautiful place. And right now the retreat business is booming. So it's a good time to do a retreat if you haven't done one yet. All right. So let's get started. My blog post for this week, of course, from a couple of years ago, is entitled "Extremes Rarely Serve Us, for There Are an Infinite Number of Choices in Life." We each have a center point, that middle ground where everything feels right. Yet for each of us, it is different. Whether it is the center point of our life, our environment, or our relationships. For some of us, our center is always being with friends and family. And for others, the center is having time to be alone. Yet for many people, their center is somewhere in between those two points. The same is true for our home. Some of us like to live in the middle of a big city. For others, that is too much energy, and they need to be in a rural area, far away from people. And then there are those of us who just want to be in nature, not surrounded by people, but with others close by. For some of us, our center is all around our work or our business. We put everything into creating something through our labor. Yet for others, we pour everything into our relationships and our families. And then there are those who find a beautiful balance between work and their personal life. For every aspect of our lives, there is a continuum that flows from extreme to its opposite, from one extreme to its opposite. That in-between landscape covers quite a bit of terrain. It can be easy to get caught in the mindset that a certain aspect of our lives has to be one extreme or another. That kind of immature thinking does not serve us very well. As we grow and learn from our experiences in life, we discover that sticking to one end of the spectrum or another is not fruitful. Indeed, there is so much complexity to life and so much opportunity to find the point that serves us the best. It is hard to be so extreme once we are aware of all the possibilities. Possibilities that abound and exist in every aspect of life. To force oneself or another to pick one extreme or another is a sign of immature thinking. So let us find a way to make room for all the colors of the rainbow and allow for each person to find their own center. Even if it is not the center we would choose, for there are as many choices in life as there are stars in the sky. So can you see where your thinking is extreme? Can you find a way to allow more center points in your life? So, as I mentioned over the last couple of weeks, two summers ago, I was in Colorado with my wife, And she got a call from her niece that her sister was diagnosed with cancer, and she left and went to China to see her sister, which we're about to go see her next week. And so she left, but we had still made all these arrangements to take care of these people's homes where they were away in Colorado. So I spent the next week and a half, 2 weeks there on my own. And so it gave me a lot of time to reflect on different things. And while I was out there, I pretty much stayed in two places. I was in this home that was on top of a mountain outside of Golden, Colorado. That was, a 1/2 hour drive to Golden down this dirt road, kind of in the middle of nowhere at the top of a mountain. And it was me, the cat, and the dog, and that was it. And so that gave me some time to just be with myself. And then from there, I went to a place in Silverthorne, Colorado, which is a bit west from there. I think it was about an hour and a half drive from that Golden, Colorado, which is just west of Denver. And that was very different. It was more of a suburban type of neighborhood. And I was taking care of this very cute Portuguese water dog puppy that was 6 months old. And so I was reflecting kind of on the difference between these and coming home to New York City and what it was like to be in the middle of nowhere in a suburban neighborhood and then back smack dab in the middle of the most urban place on the planet, New York City. And then I realized that over the years, I've talked to so many people, some who, just can't stand the city. It's too much energy for them. It's too built up, too many buildings. They just want to be out in the middle of the woods. And I've also talked to many people who can't stand the city, who just love being in the suburbs. And then there are people who just, like myself, who love the city, love its vibrancy, its variety, all it has to offer. And I was just reflecting on how none of those choices are wrong. None of those choices are better than another one. They're just different. And I think that for me, having the flexibility to be able to stay in the middle of a city, on the top of a mountain, in the middle of nowhere, in a very suburban area, wherever I happen to go, before that, the year before, we had spent 3 months on the West Coast, a month in San Diego, a month in Berkeley, a month in Vancouver, and those were all different and beautiful in their own way, and we loved the experience. Though at the end of the 3 months, I really couldn't wait to get home. And so it just kind of came to me that there is are so many choices in life. There is so much variety. And that we don't have to stay in one extreme or another. That if we can find a way to appreciate all of it, that our life is much richer that way. And so this is kind of where this blog post kind of came from. It's just really appreciating like how much choice there is in life and how many different options that, especially here in the United States, we're so fortunate. There's just every kind of different environment, different kind of neighborhood, different kind of place to live. And we can all find what serves us. But we don't have to make it wrong for other people. And I have to admit, for many years, I did. I hated the idea of living in the suburbs. I always kind of looked down upon people who lived in the suburbs because, you know, the city was where it's at. I mean, I'm native New York. I grew up in the Bronx. I've been living in Manhattan now for over 35 years. So I'm a real city boy at heart. But I've really softened a lot to the idea that different people like to live in different places. And where we live, it's just one aspect. There are so many differences between us. There are different beliefs, different religions, different philosophies, different creeds, different races, different ethnic cultures. And one of the reasons why I love New York City and I love big cities so much is that there's such a blend of all of this. That, you know, if I want to go out and have great Indian food one night and sushi the next night and Chinese the next night, like I can walk out of my apartment and within 10 blocks, there's a dozen different ethnic foods, Ethiopian, Greek, Italian, everything, even good pizza, you know? And I'm just such a believer that variety is the spice of life. That it's in all these differences and all these little permutations, all these different flavors that are around us that really give life such a rich meaning and taste and help us to really enjoy. And look, you know, there are some people who maybe they were brought up on a farm in the Midwest and that's all they know and that's what they love. And they love being with the cattle or growing whatever crops they're growing. And, you know, God bless them. That's a hard life. And that's what they love. And that's great. But I guess what I'm wanting to encourage all of you to do is to just be a little more open to something that's different than what you normally would like. And it's those differences that can make life so rich, so meaningful. And that's why I'm such an avid learner. I feel there's so much in this world to learn that there's something of value in all the major religions and all the different spiritual traditions. Doesn't mean you have to follow things dogmatically. Doesn't mean you follow every single letter of everything. But there's something there. There's something there to appreciate. And when we push against something, when we push away, when we say, no, I don't like that. No, that's not good. Whenever we push away something, we're limiting ourselves and we're limiting our lives. And that's, I don't know. For me, that just doesn't feel good. That just doesn't feel like it serves my soul. And look, you may have a different perspective. You may think that what you think is right and everything else is wrong, and that's fine. I am more than happy to give you the space to live that way as long as you don't try and force your opinions on me. I don't believe we have the right to force anybody to think a certain way, to believe a certain way. But I do believe we all have the right to live how we choose, to follow what we believe in. And so this blog post is really just a calling to you to maybe open yourself up to some new choices in life. So that's my blog post. It is entitled, extremes really serve us, for there are an infinite number of choices in life. And of course, you can always find my blog on my personally branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com. And of course, on the station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. Okay, so when we come back, hopefully in the next 2 minutes, my guest will show up. And if not, we'll continue the conversation. And if you're listening on the live stream, please feel free to tune in, you know, post your comments, your questions. I'm happy to touch upon anything that you would like to this week. And we'll see how it goes. So you are listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Brancu, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Unfortunately, my guest is MIA, so we're going to continue on our theme of the variety of choices in life and how they can serve us. And, you know, when I think of this, you know, my wife always comes to mind because we have very different tastes and things. She loves classical music, the opera, ballet. Me, I'm a tech geek. I love science fiction. I love, you know, action movies. I love all the pop kind of stuff. And my wife has been really good over the years. She came with me to see Star Wars way back when, and now she loves Yoda. And she'll come to see some of the, you know, comic book superhero movies and stuff. And look, it's not that I never go to the opera or classical music, but I have specific tastes. So there are certain things I like, certain things I don't. Like, I don't mind going to a Wagner opera, you know, the Ring cycle. And one of my favorite ones is Der Fledermaus because it's a comedy, not a tragedy. But, you know, it's just not my first choice. It's not, you know, it's like, Sam, hey, what would you like to do tonight? It's not going to be like, hey, let's go see a ballet. You know, modern dance is okay. But just because it's not my choice, just because it's not my first, go-to, um, One second. It looks like my guest is in the wrong. There we go. All right. I see my guest has entered the Zoom room. Hopefully she'll come on screen soon and I'll introduce her. But yeah, so I really do feel that variety, the differences in life and the changes that we all experience, that really is what gives life its flavor. And I would just say my one recommendation to all of you is to try something different this week. Try, something you wouldn't normally do. Go see something you wouldn't normally go see. All right. It is now Acacia, you there? Can you unmute?
Hey there, I'm trying to get my earphones set up. One second.
Okay, sure. No problem. So while she's doing all that, let me introduce her because I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Buddhist nun, ethnobiologist, and founder of Divine Master Alchemy and the Acacia Foundation, Venerable Pema Dolma, formerly known as Acacia Lewis. Venerable Pema Dolma is an ordained Getsul novice Vajrayana. For over a decade, she has explored the intersections of high-dose psilocybin practice, cultural anthropology, and Vajrayana Buddhism, studying with teachers such as Baba Kalindi Iyi and Lama Mike Crowley. Her research and teaching have included the study and ceremonial application of sacred medicines such as psilocybin-containing mushrooms, Amanita muscaria, Bufo alvaris, San Pedro, Combo, and many other ethnobotanicals, both psychedelic and non-psychedelic, with a focus on their role in cultural, medical, and spiritual development all over the world. Pema is presently preparing for a long-term silent retreat while continuing to share her insights through select lectures and collaborations. I am very, very pleased to welcome her back to the show. Pima, are you set up yet? All right. We'll give her just
Yes. Yeah, I am. Yep.
wonderful. Ah, there she is. Wonderful. Great to see you.
Hello.
Hi. So I may have mentioned this to you last time because when you came on the show, we were talking more about the psychedelic aspect, and now we're going to talk more about the Buddhist aspect. But the station was actually started by someone who became a Theravadan Buddhist monk, who now spends most of his time meditating in the woods in Thailand and Malaysia. Bante, I forget his full Buddhist name, but he used to be known as Giorgio Rapetti. So I always have a special place in my heart for nuns and monks in the Buddhist tradition. So, I guess my first question for you is just going to be, how did you decide to become a nun? I mean, that's not something most people do. I mean, many people practice Buddhism. It's a very popular, path. But what made you decide to don the robes and become a nun?
Well, I get that question a lot, Sam, actually, and I didn't actually decide on my own. Generally speaking, it's not even something that I would consider is really in the realm of, especially in the Vajrayana tradition, Theravadan tradition. It's a little bit different. You
Yes.
know, a lot of young men and young women go forth, and it's kind of seen like even kind of like going to high school, you know, in some countries, and there's even a funeral ceremony where, you know, you say you apologize to your parents for becoming a monk or a nun, you know, and you really take on a new persona and you really leave behind, you know, worldly convenience, you know, taking a begging bowl and your pitcher, and you have your robes and you live that way very simply. But Vajrayana is tantric Buddhism, and Vajrayana is a different part of the Mahayana Theravada Vajrayana tree, I guess you can say. And Vajrayana Buddhism is very, very special to me, because my late partner was very interested in Vajrayana Buddhism. And, you know, there's three sorts of main vehicles. You know, there's the Theravadan vehicle, which is kind of like the considered then the lesser vehicle. Then there's a Mahayana vehicle called the greater vehicle. And then there's a Vajrayana, the lightning thunderbolt vehicle. And none of these vehicles are great, higher or lower, I guess you could say, considering they're all Buddhist practices. But certain practices lead you to full unsurpassed awakening, and other practices, you know, kind of like arhatship, it's like 50% of the way. You know, you can reach nirvana without becoming a bodhisattva, you know. And so certain practices are more like for solitary realizers and ascetic monks who become arhats, you know, through many, many decades of devoted practice. And, you know, they want to get out of samsara, you know, and just get out, you know, and just reach enlightenment. That's the Buddhism I was accustomed to before I met Vajrayana Buddhism. And, you know, there's really nothing wrong with, you know, waking up that way. But it said, you know, that the Buddhas, you know, will actually wake up that arhat who's reached nirvana eons from that point and say, you've still got more to go. You know, our precious teacher says, you know, our guru says, you know, they'll have to take the bodhisattva path eventually. They'll have to come back and help liberate beings from suffering eventually. So their work is not complete even once they've reached nirvana. It's not Buddhahood. There's a big difference between nirvana and Buddhahood. And so Vajrayana is more geared towards people who are on the path of developing bodhisattvic qualities of compassion for all sentient beings. And that's really what makes it stand apart, is your everyday moment to moment life practice, your daily life practice, your goal is to awaken for the benefit so that you can help other beings. You won't just wake up because you want power, because you want fame, or because you want superpowers. And that's not a reason for your awakening. That's possible. You know, the only way that you're going to achieve Buddhahood is if you genuinely want to help all sentient beings to realize that they too have that same potential, and out of compassion for them, not out of some sort of selfish aggrandizement or egotistical idealism, you know. And so it really matters that, you know, from the ant, from the highest to the lowest, that you recognize that this supreme enlightened nature is inside of that awareness, inside of their awareness, and to respect all orders of life as being sacred, and having the capacity lifetime after lifetime to eventually achieve a precious human birth. And then from precious human birth, this is really the only place where we can get the work done to become an enlightened, you know. And a lot of people think, oh, I want to be a god, or oh, I want to have superpowers. And they don't realize, you know, even though there's six realms in Buddhism, you know, there's a hell realm beings, you know, who are constantly suffering, hundreds of thousands of years of hells and suffering in our Buddhist understanding of the cosmos. And then there's the beings for the hungry ghosts, you know, who can't drink any food or water and are constantly craving and thirsting for food and water and suffering immensely as a result. Then you have, you know, the animal realm, you know, and people think, oh, I want to be a cat, you know. I'm like, I don't want to be a cat, you know. Cats suffer so much, you know. The only way they can survive is by playing with their prey and killing it, you know. They can't survive without creating harm for another animal's life, you know. It's just literally cat eat cat, dog eat dog world out there, you know. And then you have the human realm, you know, and human realm, and then above that you have God realm, and then above the God's realm you have the formless God's realm, you know. And, you know, there's desire realms, formless realms, you know, and beyond formless realms that are all very wonderful places, don't get me wrong, but they are still not unsurpassed enlightenment to go fully beyond the realm of form and formlessness and beyond the realm of the gods that are, you know, long-lived gods may live billions of years, and still they have to suffer death and rebirth eventually. And so, you know, getting to know the Buddhist reality or worldview was really freeing for me, you know, because taking psychedelics, you know, you stumble into all sorts of realms all the time.
Yes, yes. You know? I want you to hold it there because we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, I actually want to talk about psychedelics, the relationship to Buddhism, and kind of was that your path to Buddhism or was it sort of a dual path happening at the same time? Okay.
Okay.
All right. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with the Venerable Pema Doma, and we'll be right back after this.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And welcome back. So Pema, I know you only have a little bit more time to spend with us, but I really just wanted to get into and ask you that question of, was psychedelics sort of your path to Buddhism? Was it something you found independent that worked with it? And sort of for you, what's the relationship between Buddhism and psychedelics? If there is one, maybe there's not.
Well, you know, I was always interested in psychedelics and such because my parents named me acacia, you know, and that's the name of a psychedelic plant. You know, I realized when I was like 5 years old, Googling my name on the internet, that there was something mysterious about my name, you know, and that was when AOL was first coming out and such, you know, and then also simultaneously, you know, I really cared about sentient beings like worms and earthworms. My mom always tells me stories about me picking up worms on the sidewalk and putting them in the grass and picking up snails. And, you know, I had pet crabs, you know, hermit crabs and things like that. I used to breed little fishes, you know, like different types of guppies and different types of mollies, live bearing fish. I was always very fascinated with, you know, nature and life, you know, in general, and also Buddhism. I'd see a Buddhist statue and be like, oh, there's the real thing. I know I'm not allowed to look at it, but I want to, you know. And, you know, growing up in a Christian household that was very disciplined, you know, I wasn't educated really. And I would find my education through National Geographics about other cultures, religions, and spiritual traditions. And I did have a natural curiosity that erupted around the time I got married. And I got married to my partner in, I think, 2014. I don't remember our anniversary. 2015, 222. Sorry, anniversary. 222. And my partner had a natural predisposition to dharmic activity, just hated the idea of, you know, death, people killing people, you know, didn't like violent movies, was very calm and level-headed. And Mike really brought me closer. My partner, Mike, brought me closer to a deeper understanding of the not only the practical applications of Dharma, but the necessity of transforming oneself for the benefit of not only yourself, but also for others. You know, I guess I had thought of it as kind of like this woo-woo kind of pie in the sky, hippie, you know, religion at first, because the people who would tell me about it always seemed to be throwing around quotes. Buddha said this and Buddha said that, but they couldn't tell me what Buddhism was, you know, they couldn't tell me a shred really of anything of depth, you know? And so I always was exposed to the surface, especially in the conscious community of people who were spiritual seekers. You know, I was a Hare Krishna for a long time. You know, because the ashrams, you know, have free food on Sundays, and, you know, being a very underprivileged, low income kid, you know, who was not at home, you know, as I should have been, I really appreciated that I could survive by going and spending time with the Hare Krishnas. And so that exposed me to some Eastern spiritual system. But, you know, as I got older, I started realizing as a female, and also as a female, you know, as an African American, there were certain areas I couldn't access of the spiritual tradition that were locked inside of the culture, inside of religious beliefs about one's gender, you know. You know, females couldn't really be gurus in the Hare Krishna movement or teachers. And then when I started talking about psychedelics, it was a mess. You know, I got a lot of pushback, especially because I was reading about Amritas and Shivism, you know, and I got made fun of, you know, because they're like, oh, you're a Jagannath devotee. You love Shiva, you know, you love all that, you know, blue necked mushroom stuff, you know, that's not really what we do. We just chant Hare Krishna. Can you just chant, you know, and not look over there at all of the old Upanishads and stuff, just chant the Maha Mantra and everything will be okay. And for a long time I did. And then one day my partner pulled me aside and just was like, we can't keep doing this. I can't keep going there. They don't like me. My partner was transmasculine and he felt very uncomfortable, you know, being there. Sometimes people would not be so friendly, you know? And so around 2015, Lama Mike Crowley book came out. Of course, my partner's name was Mike, and there was Lama Mike. And so Mike was like, oh, look at this book, you know, this guy, he's writing about what we do, you know, because Mike had already been practicing Buddhism without a teacher, you know, before I really got involved. Mike was listening to sutras on this little Chinese app, you know, where you could play the music and it would go, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani. I'd be like listening. I'd be like, "Oh, that sounds good. Yeah, it needs like some drum beat. You know, some snare drum in the background. You know, like be beatboxing to Mike's mantras and stuff. You know, and what's so funny is those apps. You know, so funny. It's like it's this free app you can get on the App Store. It has all these sutras inside, and I didn't understand the value or the meaning of sutras. But because I came from a Hare Krishna background, I had an appreciation for ancient texts. So I was like, well, what's their ancient text like? Do they have a Bible? Do they have some sort of book I can read? And of course, you know, I got the answer, oh, we have 84,000. And I'm like, I can't.
84,000.
What? 84,000 teaching. Oh, why do you need all those? You know, like, can you usually have one guy that I can read and get some wisdom out of? And so inside of my confusion about what was the main text, I discovered like Amitabha Sutra, Lotus Sutra. These are famous works that are, you know, teachings of the Buddha, and Mahayana teachings mainly. And I just fell in love with the iconography and the imagery of how it transported me from planet Earth into the heavenly realms, you know, into getting to, you know, kind of visualize these bodhisattvas that were there to, that taken vows to liberate sentient beings from suffering. There was just so much beauty and so much depth inside of the sutras that I was moved to tears on more than one occasion reading them. And at some of the lowest points in my life, we read sutras together and really bonded deeply. And so after Mike passed away about 8 years later, Mike passed away in 2021. By that time, Mike had decided he wanted to be a monk. And I had also decided that I was going to pursue the path deeply after we had our first kid. Of course, impermanence is something that I didn't read about in Buddhism before I got to experience the loss of what would have been my first child and my partner on the same day. And so when you go through preparing to have something, have a life or have a notion of a life, that is the life that you want to live. Mm-hmm. And you spend your whole energy, your whole life fighting to have stability, fighting to have acceptance, fighting to have the basic things that you need. Then all of a sudden, life pulls the rug out from under you, as it tends to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are left in shock and in grief and in realizing, well, this isn't what I thought it was. This wasn't supposed to happen. I was told that if I was a good person, this kind of stuff didn't happen to good people. You know, you can make all sorts of fake justifications in your mind that you think that you're somehow above going through the worst suffering that exists. And then when you go through it, then you have to realize, oh, everybody goes through this. In mm-hmm. fact, so many good people go through this, and we don't talk about it.
Right.
And it needs to be talked about. It needs to be looked at, this hurting, this humanness of pain and suffering that yeah. we all go through. We need to have a plan, you know, for it. You know, we go through our lives so attached to the appearances of goodness, to the appearances of what's comfortable, what makes us feel good. And that attachment leads us to this suffering, because we feel like when the thing outside of us that's good goes away, there's nothing left for us.
Yeah.
That's what was making us happy. There's nothing inside of ourselves that we can really find stability in. And finding our own Buddha nature, our own innate nature, it really saved my life, because Lama Mike Crowley, he became my teacher, you know, shortly after the death of my partner, Mike, and kind of a really auspicious turn of events. You know, I got to meet him and listen to his lectures, and I really resonated with what he was sharing, you know, about the link between psychedelics and Buddhism. But for me, it was more about how do I find stability? And he was so patient with me for so many years, still is. You know, I still need to give him a phone call, you know, because he's in another country right now, in Wales, but
yeah,
you know.
So do you still, even though you've become a nun and you're engaged on this path, do you still use psychedelics, or have you given
that's an ambiguous area, you know? Secret drugs of Buddhism is secret, you know. It's not something that we just go on to, oh, we just do such and such. But I will say this, because my guru did tell me, he said it would be good for you to tell people this, you know. Years of working with mushrooms, you know, led me to being more open-minded, I would say, to actual Buddhist practices, and then gave me previews of what, if I actually did practice more seriously, what benefits could happen. And that was very encouraging for me on my path, you know?
Yeah.
And when I talked to my current guru, who is a high lama, you know, in the Kagyu lineage, he said, you know, you should tell people, you know, the way that you became a nun, you know, I didn't ask to become a nun. He told me I would make a good nun. And then it started off with me not believing him. I don't think you know what I'm really like. You know, I might seem calm and nice and all this stuff, but I'm really not that kind of person. He's like, I think you would make a good nun. And so that idea was like a seed planted in fertile soil, you know, after all of these years of spiritual practice and working with psychedelics, it was a seed. And then one day I had an experience with a toad venom, 5-MeO-DMT, Bufo. And, you know, I'd had six other experiences with it up to that point. I was fairly experienced psychonaut, but this was after he told me, I think you would make a good nun. I was still a lay Buddhist. And as a lay Buddhist, yeah, I did work with psychedelics for generating bodhicitta with my guru's instructions. You know, there's a book called Psychedelic Buddhism, if you're interested. And it does outline some actual Buddhist practices that can be combined with the use of mushrooms and other substances by Lama Mike Crowley for for lay Buddhists, you know, but for mm-hmm. ordained people, there are certain regulations, you know, our guru has to be involved in that. And so before I got ordained, I had an experience with Bufo. And when I let go in the direction of letting go of my fear of what could happen, what could go wrong if I became ordained. And I had all sorts of a cooped up mess in my head about what could possibly go wrong and how I would possibly mess it up. And then I realized, as long as I'm aware, as long as I'm present, I'm not going to mess this up. It's when I'm not present that I mess things up. It's when I'm not aware that I mess things up. And I was able to let go of that fear and that conditioning that, oh, I won't have enough money. Oh, I won't have enough support. Oh, my parents are going to hate me. Oh, I'll never be loved. Oh, you know, I can never love other people. I had all of this cooped up kind of a conditioning in my head as to why you just don't do that, you know, as an American, you know, African-American, black woman who's, you know, studied physics in college. You know, I took skepticism very seriously. I was a raging skeptic most of my time in college and borderline atheist, you know. And it took me having these experiences and these moments of encounters with compassion, and generally from random strangers, sometimes from family members, but mostly from random strangers, and having experiences with this kind of mysterious compassion for me to really get interested.
So I know you have to run. You're about to engage in a silent retreat for how long?
It's not just silent. It's contemplative. It's our traditional 3-year retreat. It's one of the spiritual experiences that's recommended for monks and nuns to have if they can, if they have the freedom to do so. And it requires a great deal of support from your teacher, from your community, because you will be off the grid. You won't be on social media. You'll still be talking in retreat, but to your retreat masters and to your peers, you know, not to the outside world.
Yeah.
So it will appear silent to the world.
Well, listen, I really wish you all the best. I hope that maybe when you come out of your retreat, that we can reconnect. And I would love to hear what you got out of it and how it supported your spiritual progress.
I really appreciate that. You know, my job is to study the Buddha's teachings and to pay homage, you know, and to walk in the footsteps of my gurus and those who came before me and honored in a good way. And so thank you for your support and your prayers. And I hope that I can live up to your expectations, hopefully.
I have no expectations, just curiosity. Okay.
Okay.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I know you're very busy right now.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, everybody, we're going to take a last little commercial break and we'll come back. I just have some final thoughts before we end the show. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Ready to serve up success with a splash? Hi, I'm Bruce Kramer, a.k.a. the Corporate Cockroach.
I'm the Renaissance Woman, Angie Snowball.
And I'm your strategy doctor, Dr. Navtej Dasanjh, inviting you to serving up success with a splash.
Join us as we shake things up with real talk and real strategies centered around awareness, action, and accountability.
And yes, there really is a cocktail involved. Please join us and sip your way to success.
Serving up success with a splash, where wisdom meets happy hours. Cheers!
Cheers!
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So I really want to extend my gratitude to Pima Dolma, formerly Acacia Lewis, for taking the time to come on the show today and just speak a little bit about her background, her experience, why she became a Buddhist nun and before she goes off on her retreat. And also being open about the fact of the psychedelic influence. And this is something that I really wanted to touch upon a little bit more. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of time, but I've had many people come on my show over the years who either are still actively engaged in using psychedelics or who used psychedelics. And that was sort of their gateway into spirituality, into finding a path that really served them. And so for me, and the reason why I have so many people come on my show and talk about psychedelics and talk about different aspects of it, I have some really wonderful guests in the fall who will be talking about it. But the reason why is because for me personally, I do find it as a key for enhancing our consciousness. And to me, that's a spiritual practice, that whenever we raise our consciousness around any aspect of our life, our emotional aspect, our physical aspect, our familial aspects, or even work, whenever we raise our consciousness, that's a spiritual act. And while psychedelics may have still a little bit of stigma from the 70s and still not fully accepted, I truly do believe that it is really a gateway, that it is a path to finding our own internal spirituality. And it doesn't matter whether you're Christian or Jew or Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu or Jainist or whatever your particular belief system is, psychedelics are non-religious. Psychedelics are non-discriminatory. Psychedelics don't care what your belief system is. They're here, I believe, to help us to raise our consciousness around it. And that can raise your spiritual awareness in whatever particular frame of reference you choose. And so I guess I'm just making this sort of a call out there to anyone listening. And even if you're an atheist, even if you're agnostic, even if you don't believe that there's spirit or God or whatever you want to term it, even if you're a hardcore materialist, which if you've listened to my past episodes, especially the one with Paul Levy about the quantum revelation, according to quantum physics, everything is energy. So this isn't a physical universe. This is an energetic universe that just appears physical. But even if you're a hardcore materialist, maybe psychedelics can help you to be greater aware, greater conscious of this physical reality. Look, I don't believe in denying the physical reality. I don't believe that we're here to ascend and leave this physical plane. I believe we're here to descend these spiritual energies into this physical world to create heaven on earth, to create a more conscious, more mature, more ethical, more spiritual world to live in, one which we can all be accepted for our differences, which kind of goes back to, you know, where I started with my blog post today. That to me, the greatest challenge in today's world is the lack of acceptance of difference, is the lack of acceptance of people thinking differently, practicing differently, dressing differently, being different. And I think if we can just find some more acceptance, through that acceptance, we can find more peace. And that ultimately is what we all want. So I do believe that psychedelics can help us to know ourselves better. And that's why I like talking about it so much on the show. The same way all these different systems like astrology, numerology, human design, the engram, they're all about helping us to understand ourselves better. I had a group over the weekend out in Fire Island, and somebody asked one of the participants if they knew what human design they were. And they were like, oh, I don't like labels. It's not about a label. It's about understanding. It's about being more of who and what we truly are deep inside. And for me, psychedelics is just one path towards that. Meditation, journaling, movement, all of that is a path as well. And so I'd love to hear from you. What's your path? What's your way of getting to know yourself better? How do you practice being more of who you are? Because I think if in the end we're more in alignment with who and what we truly are, then we can really be more accepting of everyone else and who and what they truly are. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you got something out of it, even my ramblings in the beginning. I appreciate you all. I look forward to returning. We do have some shows in store for you while I'm away. But I do hope you keep listening to the show. I got some really wonderful guests coming up later this month, September, October, November. And also, in case I haven't forgot to mention, we do have a couple of new shows starting next week on the talkradio.nyc. We do have a therapist doing a show all about her association with personal and spiritual development as well as psychedelics. And that show is called The Expansion Room. And her name is Siobhan Larice. And she's going to be starting her show. It'll start next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time here on the network. And on Thursdays, we have another business show coming on called Making Sales Seamless with Art Fromm at 7 p.m. on Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right after Serving Up Success with a Splash. So we're getting a nice little business block building there. So more shows coming up. Making Seamless Sales. Yes. Thank you for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be frank about health with all of you.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.